Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good morning, Mr. Edwards. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Mr. Allen. Let me just give a call out, a spiritual call out to Muhammad Nord, the former Minneapolis police officer, Somali black officer, if you will, who was convicted of second-degree murder and manslaughter. We just want to send our prayers to him as his life is in jeopardy. A lot of people don't know. Our national and worldwide audience definitely doesn't know that Muhammad Nord, at 6:30 yesterday morning, by order of the white female judge who presided over his trial and the county attorney, Michael Freeman, ordered that Mr. Nord be taken in shackles, handcuffs, and etc., placed on a Greyhound bus, which is what the you're not supposed to know this, Don, but that's the transportation that is contracted with by the Department of Corrections. And he was taken in handcuffs and shackles to the most maximum security penitentiary in the state of Minnesota at Oak Park Heights, which is, for those looking at a map, is a short distance from Stillwater, Minnesota, not to be confused with the Stillwater prison. Oak Park Heights, a state-of-the-art, if you will, the facility, but below ground, cells, and et cetera. We pray for the safety of Muhammad Nord because a contract has been assigned to neo-Nazis operating out of that facility. We'll talk a little bit more as we get into the program about the transfer of at least a couple of skinheads to the facility, if you will, from the state of Iowa. Their explicit purpose to participate in the death of Muhammad Nord inside of the maximum security facility at Oak Park Heights. So I just want to send to our brother, in the name of Islam, our prayers for his safe future. Okay? Go ahead, Don. Go ahead. What do we got?
Yeah, we got a lot going on this morning, Mr. Edwards, and I think we need to address this church fire starting out, if that's okay with you, and what happened on, if I'm not mistaken, Sunday night. We are also live streaming on Facebook. You can find that. That's a public feed for everybody across the world that wants to watch and listen to this program. We appreciate it. But, Mr. Edwards, earlier this week there was a church fire, and we did a special live Facebook Live broadcast that has received thousands of hits and thousands of views about what was going on with this church program, our church fire, and how the mainstream media totally ignored it. And I received several correspondence with a representative from the Star Tribune who dismissed it as kids playing with matches. If you will, because you've been in consultation with the pastor of that church, break this down for us and tell us what has happened and why this was not kids playing with matches. This is a bigger thing.
All right, Mr. Allen, let's do this. This event took place this past Sunday in St. Paul, on the so-called east side of St. Paul, if you will. It was the beloved Reverend Denny Patterson, if you will. He is his church, and he has been the pastor of that church at that location for 15 years. And during that period of time, there had been racist attacks upon his property, his vehicles, and et cetera. So I doubt that the little 9 or 10 or 11-year-old kids that the Minneapolis Star Tribune and a reporter by the name of LaVoris Janey and others, and as well as the St. Paul Pioneer Press, tried to palm off, though the St. Paul Fire Department and St. Paul Police Department have declared it a arson. They are trying to stay away because of the political nature of what is in existence at this particular hour from indicating that it was a hate crime. But neo-Nazi groups from around the country, particularly out of San Paul, we're naming the facilities in which their command operations are facilitated out of Sandpoint, Idaho, and Mars Hill, North Dakota. Excuse me, Mars Hill, North Carolina. The skinhead slash neo-Nazi, particularly the Heinrich SS group, are taking credit for those firebombings. I was outraged when you shared with me that this reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune attempted to pretend that it was 9, 10, 11-year-olds. Even the police, St. Paul Police Department, indicated something altogether different as it pertains to the age of the individuals, Reverend Patterson and his support group. He is being supported. Now, the bombing actually took place at 5 o'clock in the afternoon in the city of St. Paul at his church, if you will. There was damage. There was heavy smoke and some slight fire damage to the inside of his office and library, if you will. Civic leaders in St. Paul, African-American civic leaders, in fact, many of them went to the site, took pictures of the damage and et cetera. And since then, Reverend Patterson has been in consultation with the office of the mayor, who is an African-American, Melvin Carter, the chief of the St. Paul Police Department, the fire chief, the fire marshal for the state of Minnesota, if you will. And certainly they all agree that it was arson, and it certainly wasn't started. I think a point that you made to the reporter, as I understand it from my feedback when he tried to BS you, that it was just some little kids, which both the St. Paul and Minneapolis paper got their heads together and tried to report that, is that you raised the question, so where'd the kids get the gasoline from? And I thought that was an excellent inquiry by you. And this is being investigated. Now, this comes on the heels of an event 3.5 weeks ago that is chilling. I have made a commitment and a promise at this particular hour not to reveal the name of the church or the pastor. It is an African-American church, Mr. Allen, fairly large size, if you will, a older population of parishioners and et cetera. An attempt was made by a neo-Nazi who had quietly moved into the Northside neighborhood. I will give this much out, the Northside neighborhood in which this church has been located there for more than 20-some years. This individual has been leading and targeting this African-American church in North Minneapolis, and what happened 3.5 weeks ago, an attempt was made by these neo-Nazis to blow up a van belongs to the church that was occupied by at least 6 or 7 elderly black parishioners. If it had not been for the alertness and actions of the African-American driver of that van, we would have had a serious, serious tragedy. What has basically happened, every Sunday, this neo-Nazi and his associates call the Minneapolis Police Department and complain about, you know, the NIGs, if you will. I try to stay away from the actual word that they use. So that bombing almost took place. Now, there's been nothing from elected public officials, civil rights leaders, and et cetera, though they know the minister of that church well, if you will. They've been in meetings with him and et cetera, it's really sad and it's frightening that there's been so little support for that African-American church in North Minneapolis. Now, that's not to be confused with New Hope Baptist Church in St. Paul. That, for our worldwide audience, is the name of the African-American church that they finally wrote a story and gave you a map and showed you where that church is located. But Reverend Patterson said he will be conducting services tomorrow. I understand that some residents of St. Paul have indicated that they will prepare a paramilitary group to provide protection to that church so that that congregation can go about their ecumenical service without impediment, if you will. But these are dangerous times here in our beloved Shangri-La, Mr. Allen. I hope that satisfies any inquiry that people may have, and the sham, and it's an absolute sham, by the Minneapolis Star Tribune, to make it appear that some little 11 or 12-year-old little white youngsters with matches set the fire. And I applaud you, sir, for raising the question to the Boris Cheney of the Minneapolis Star Tribune that how could he even go with that kind of narrative? Where did the youngsters get the gasoline from? So I hope that satisfies that inquiry. Go ahead.
Yes, it does. Again, our call-in number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. You call in, we'll take your name and your question, and we'll answer it to the best of our ability. Mr. Edwards, we do have a couple of callers. Let's see what these callers want to inquire. Caller, you're live on the air. It's Ron and Don Show. What's your name and your question? Caller. Okay, we'll put them back in the queue. And we have one more here. Caller, 1840, you're live on the air.
In the queue.
Well, thank you. Thank you. She wants to remain in the queue. Thanks for listening. And our phone lines are open. If you want to call in, just go ahead and dial that number, 347-426-3904. Another thing people are concerned about as we speak about the Mohamed Noor verdict was the $20 million settlement awarded to the family of Ms. Diamond, and there's been some questions because, Mr. Edwards, aren't there some families waiting for settlements for their unarmed, not only in Minnesota but across the United States, waiting for settlements from the different cities? We'll stick with Minneapolis right now, just in the city of Minneapolis, waiting for settlements. How is it that in 3 days there's a $20 million settlement, and we're going here in Minneapolis and St. Paul as long as 10 years before these families get any money? How does that happen, Mr. Edwards?
It happens because it is a race issue, contrary to what the Jewish mayor of the city of Minneapolis tried to impart to the world yesterday doing his quote-unquote press conference and et cetera. It is about race. We have additional information which we'll be sharing on this program during this hour-long program. It's about race, Don. It's about race. African Americans, mm-hmm. people of color, Native Americans, and et cetera. Also, there are a couple of Native Americans that have cases pending, if you will, lawsuits pending that have been on the back burner and on hold for 4, 5, 6 years. The longest one here is one involving a young African American whose head was blown off by the police almost 7 years ago. Terrence Franklin, if you will, shot and killed in a basement in South Minneapolis. His father, Walter Franklin Sr., God bless him for staying the course. It took the United States Supreme Court to make a decision a couple of months ago ordering that the case must go to trial. The city of Minneapolis appealed everybody. He, first of all, tried to stop the trial judge, Donovan Frank, a respected federal judge. We're not talking about some guy standing out on the corner. Donovan Frank, he was presiding judge. The city of Minneapolis challenged him. After he overruled them, they appealed to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, 3-member panel of the Eighth Circuit, heard the case, ruled in favor of the judge, ordered the case to trial. The city of Minneapolis then did a rare thing in some respects. They appealed to the full 9-member bench of the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals. The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, 9-member, heard the case, upheld the 3-member panel and Judge Frank. The city of Minneapolis then said, no, to hell with this, and appealed to the United States Supreme Court, where actually a year ago, the United States Supreme Court upheld all of the other legal entities, ordered that the case go to trial. It actually was supposed to start around the 11th or 12th of April here. The city begging, though it was the county that handled the prosecution of Officer Nord, the city maintaining that there was too much hostility, friction, toxicity, and et cetera, and asked for a continuance until the 7th of October, which the trial judge, Donovan Frank, has indicated, or if he's still the trial judge, the record has been so long that the trial and the case will go to trial. So your question is well put. We have Jamar Clark. We have a number of others in this town. If you will, Thurman Blevins, these people attempted to file. They attempted to file. He was the young African-American shot and killed by police in June of last year. The city will not even begin negotiations and et cetera. but it is the Jamar Clark that should upset many of the people in this town who will say they are activists, if you will, who marched on the police station in November of 2015, closing down the streets. Actually, there were periodic battles. It was 18 days that the 4th Precinct was held under siege and et cetera. The Clark family still trying to negotiate, if you will, in the death of their loved one. We have some others, if you will. You've already named some of the national, Mr. Allen, and it's shocking. It's shocking. I got to tell you, to be able to put together a deal, which meant that they had been working on this for a long time, which meant that they knew, working through the trial judge and the prosecutor, Mike Freeman, that they were going to, by hook or crook, notice what we said, my friend, hook or crook, they were going to get a guilty verdict. And negotiations were going on, deals were being cut. And I think you're going to find it a little bit later on in this program surprising on how that money at $20 million is being cut up. $2 million has already been given to a foundation that is headed up by former mayor, R.T. Ryback, who never showed any propensity for the problems facing the African-American community. Though many of the Negro population just loved R.T., and he has an African-American woman there that is allegedly his number two. By the way, for those that think they're going to get some of that $2 million that the Justine Rastek Diamond family allegedly left, that money is gone already. That money is gone.
Yeah, exactly. And I watched that press conference. And, again, now this is Don Allen from the right, Mr. Edwards. I want to explain this. You know, we have a lot of black Minnesotans complaining now. They're complaining now. You need to hold this in back of your head, and when you go to the ballot box to vote, decide who you vote for. I'm not telling you to vote for no Republicans, okay? I'm not telling you that. I'm saying look at what happened. These are the Democratic mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Frey, the Democratic city council, mostly of color, in 3 days decided to grant this $20 million settlement. And you have all the brothers that have unarmed, that have been shot by police, waiting years. So, yeah, Mr. Edwards, on your statement that this is a race thing, it's absolutely correct. I mean, I hate to put it like that, but that's what it is, and that's just fact. Why is it that we can't get our settlements immediately? You know, they just... Oh, $20 million, here, boom, the largest settlement. And the first Minnesota police officer ever been tried and convicted and jailed on killing an unarmed person in the history of policing in Minnesota.
That's
he
right.
Happens to be
ever
a Somali black man.
A territory and then became a state. You're absolutely correct. I have to tell you, as one who has, you know, experience with negotiations and things like this over the years, has been involved and in the middle of some of the, unfortunately, most celebrated cases, Tysel Sharon Scott, Tysel Nelson, and others killed by law enforcement, to see, negotiate. Do you realize, well, yes, you do, Mr. Allen. You are an educator and an educated man. Do you understand the swiftness and the difficulty on the other hand that you would have in negotiating a $20 million settlement? And you know, you people are now indicating where a lot of that money will come from. There will be some city employees that will kind of be stripped naked. And if it were not for the insurance coverage, Mr. Allen, you know, the city may have been broke. But the swiftness, sir, and we say this to our international audience and others, is that this negotiation allegedly, sir, was consummated within 3 days. Come on.
3 days.
There is information out there, the deal that has been cut and how the money, quote-unquote, wink-wink, will be split up as the Justine's family returns to Australia, if you will. You know, you got to remember, this is the same father that met with the then Australian Prime Minister, Mr. Turnbull, and talked about black law enforcement officers. I was critical of my brothers in the black law enforcement, that they did not stand up and oppose some of the statements that were being made at that time by the father, if you will, and by the Prime Minister of Australia. Yeah, for anybody wants to challenge or test it, go back, get on your website, get on your computer, and take a look at news stories from the quote-unquote champion Minneapolis Star Tribune in late July and August of 2017. Take a look at some of the statements attributed then to the father and the information he was feeding and being fed by law enforcement. For the father to stand up there and talk in terms that there was corruption in the Minneapolis Police Department, I mean, heck, I'd like to see his phone bill. I'd like to see how many calls, conversations he had with city officials and et cetera. But this was a sweet deal. This is a sweet package
together. Yes, it was, Mr. Edwards. And, you know, I'm thinking that they did it so quick because Minneapolis, the city of Minneapolis, fast-tracked Knorr and a bunch of other officers through the program so they'd have their minority numbers. And they didn't really want that getting out and being that being investigated on training and things like that. But, you know, as I said on the show 2 weeks ago, I honestly thought Mohammed Noor would walk out a free man. You know, I thought that, you know, I just, based on all the other police shootings, you know, be it unarmed or armed, the officers, Mr. Ellis, the white officers,
I
the black
officers. I know we've had private conversations. I know from my long experience and from being also the chairman of a federal of the Department of Justice appointed Department of Justice. It wasn't appointed by a bunch of colored guys standing around on the corner. Appointed by the in 2006, appointed by the Department of Justice that was prepared to place the Minneapolis Police Department in federal receivership from 2004-2008. We held our ground. 2006, we began really serious negotiations, trying to work together, and et cetera. And by the way, the man who is going to be handling the $2 million, wink, wink, that the Justine family allegedly gave to the Minneapolis Foundation, this same mayor, when we asked him, and my good friend and co-chair at that time, Clyde Belcourt of the Native American community, we begged them in a letter to allow us at least another 6 months to finalize some of the agreements and et cetera that had been made under the auspices of the Department of Justice in 2004. The then chief and specifically the mayor, R.T. Ryback, told us to kiss his behind and moved on. Now, what happened in 2013? Oh, yeah, this is the history. In 2013, then chief Janae Harto, seeing that a wrong had been committed, approached the Department of Justice on her own and said, we want to reopen negotiations. A special committee was put together. I think for those that are saying, you know, what is this guy talking about? I was a member of that committee. We were under the direct supervision of then Assistant Chief Chris Arneson, white female, an outstanding officer, et cetera, and we worked our behinds off for 2.5 years. To get reform back into this department. And now to see what has happened. By the way, be advised that one of the targets here, we'll see if anybody has the heart to ask us the question, Mr. Allen, this morning. One of the real targets in this entire episode is to bring down the African American chief, Madela Arredondo. It's all a setup.
Yes.
It's all a setup.
And Mr. Edwards,
the mayor is undercutting him, his assistant chief, Joseph. Is undercutting him. It is rotten out here. It is rotten.
Wow.
But go ahead, Don.
And we have a caller, a friend of the show from the Midwest. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Hello. Good morning. How are you?
Yes, sir. Steve, one of his people? Yes. How you doing, sir? I received
good.
A communique from one of your staff people. You, I understand this morning you have some questions about what has happened here, and my colleague, Mr. Allen, has just completed reviewing how within 3 days, man, our city leaders came up with $20 million for these Aussies.
Yeah. Well, you kind of answered one of my questions about how is this going to affect the budget in the city budget. I mean, that's just – the settlement was just all out of proportion to anything I've seen before, so I'm just kind of wondering about that.
Well, on the question, sir, of the budget, there probably will be some hires that won't be made for the next year or so, you know what I mean, inside the city government. You know, there will be some adjustments. There will be some monies moved around. There will be some monies taken away from programs, if you will. One of the reasons that they made the grand announcement that $2 million will be set aside allegedly to deal with gun violence. Let me tell you, we've had two homicides broad daylight almost since the verdict. Okay, we shoot them up here. We're better than Abilene, Dodge City, Tombstone, and etc. I mean, they shooting them up here, brother. Like it is going out of style. But to your specific question, there will have to be financial adjustments within city government, and we will not be hiring people to fill certain positions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Also, I had a question too about where is Nora right now? Was he actually put into a maximum security prison? Is that true?
Sir, we announced that. We broke that story actually this morning here. Let me just give you the background on it. Is that the judge, the white female judge, who really had a lot to do with painting him into a corner and guaranteeing his conviction, if you will. I tell you, she's rotten through and through. Along with the county attorney. But to your specific question, at 6:30 yesterday morning here in our beloved Shangri-La, he was awakened. The Department of Correction guards and et cetera, the local sheriff here, who is in his first year, first term, really was not happy with it, but he had no choice because the judge and the county attorney, Mike Freeman, and the judge made the order. And the order was predicated on the fact that they were concerned about his safety.
Oh.
Now, see, that's a red flag, particularly when it is known in certain quarters that a contract has already been put on the life of Muhammad North. I would have to respectfully indicate to you, sir, and to our listening audience that I will be surprised if Muhammad Nord is still alive at the end of the year.
Oh,
he is, back to your question, he was taken in handcuffs and shackles and chains, put on a Greyhound bus. They contract with Greyhound to put the prisoners there and drop them off at the penitentiary. Of course, the first stop is always Oak Park Heights. Oak Park Heights is a brand new, you know, couple years old, state of the art. It's like the a couple of the penitentiaries in Indiana and Colorado. He was then taken into the facility, if you will, placed in a cell, though not in segregation. In fact, he was placed in a cell in close proximity, and this is interesting, to a group of skinheads, neo-Nazis, that somewhere or another were transferred from the state penitentiary in Fort Madison, Iowa, to the facility at Oak Park Heights because these guys are so dangerous. Now, the command centers of the neo-Nazi groups, particularly the Heinrich SS group, from their headquarters, and I want to make sure people understand this because we've been trying to tell people this for a number of years, identifying some of the killings that have gone on in that part of Idaho and Washington State and Montana. The neo-Nazi groups have indicated from their fortresses in Sandpoint, Idaho, and Mars Hill, North Carolina, that an agreement has been reached, contract has been provided, money has been paid, and that Muhammad Nord will not survive the year. That's how it's operating. Now, when the judge ordered, she issued the order that he be moved post haste from his cell in the county jail. See, this is really kind of a slap in the face of the sheriff of this county because we got a pretty brand new jail. I mean, it ain't quite 10 years old, and it has facilities for protective custody. Okay, they want Muhammad Nord inside of the maximum security facility here in Minnesota at Oak Park Heights. They want him there. My sense is that he will commit suicide. Let's put it like that. He will hang himself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's where he is. They are in on it. Let me also say this, is that there is money involved, and let me give you a pattern, because Justine's family is on their way back to Australia. The arrangement that is made here is that the $20 million check will clear in a number of days. It will be deposited in three banks in Australia. Then money will be deposited in banks in Jakarta, Indonesia, and Singapore. And then an amount of money will appear in the Cayman Islands. And that will be the money that will be used to do some bail.
Oh.
I mean, these folks became enthralled. They became almost homicidal with regards to wanting to see, number one, this man, Mohammed Noor, 24 years old. All he wanted to do was be a good police officer, et cetera. We now have here a white police officer, definitely the blacks, but saying no way in the world they will engage in any kind of gun battle with anybody white. Now, they'll shoot. They say they'll shoot their own kind, left and right. But in the case of African-American officers, they know that they're existing on borrowed time. Now, what we're hearing here, sir, is a lot of rhetoric. You know, you got the little Jewish mayor. You got the county attorney. You got R.T. Ryback of the Minneapolis Foundation saying this will begin the healing process, and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And they've already sent a message to some of our African-American leaders that if they toe the line, they defend the actions that the system has taken, the criminal justice system, the prosecution, and et cetera, that they'll get a little piece of money.
Oh, wow.
So, Mr. Edwards,
stay with us, Steve. Go ahead, Mr.
Allen.
Okay.
Yeah, I just have a $20 million question. What is the response from the Somali community going to be? Because I'm expecting a huge blowback.
No.
Haven't seen it yet.
You won't. What is Somali leaders, and they're basically led by this Somali who's on the city council. Somalis have been told that they need to be very careful about how they may offend us, quote-unquote, this is the us white folks here, because you may find yourself looking at deportation. You understand right now Liberians, which we have a large Liberian population, and Steve, this is for your ears, if you will. We have a large Liberian population that's been here for quite some time, and the guy that's now the Attorney General of Minnesota, former congressman, has been spending a lot of time with them. He ain't spent much time, you know, with the Minnesota black community. But what the Liberians were told, and the same thing is being told to the Somalis as we speak, need to be careful. Need to be careful, Sammy. That's a vulgar reference to black African Sammy, call him Sammy.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been told that if they rock the boat, step out of line, offend the sensitive ears of the white population, that they will be deported.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they'll be deported.
Mm-hmm.
Their status is fragile, to say the best, if you will, and to say the least is that they are anyone that steps out of line, even is accused, accusatory. Is the name of the game now, or accused of being anti-American, they're on their way out of here. So I hope, Mr. Allen, my colleague here in studio, I hope that kind of satisfies it. But then we shouldn't feel bad because our leadership, civil rights, and et cetera, have been pretty quiet too.
Yeah.
Oh, it is very quiet. No press conferences from the NAACP, the Urban League, or anybody. Nothing. Nothing.
Wow.
Not even our black newspapers. You know, there's no counter stories. There's no editorial that is for or against or not. They're just blowing smoke up our ass, basically. So, but go ahead.
That's what it is. An excellent question. Steve, there in the Midwest, any other additional questions? Because we are prepared to answer to the best of our knowledge. I repeat again that money will be transferred from one particular location to another location to a final location, and then it will be transferred to accounts here in Minnesota. All people... People are going to be well paid with that $20 million. Ain't going to be none of us. Yeah. I mean, it's not no people of color. I don't want to confuse it in any shape, form, or fashion. But this entire trial, my network, my television network, had a white reporter in the courtroom the entire time. He was there every day. He had to get there at 6 o'clock in the morning, man, to preserve his seat. He basically was anti-police, okay? I mean, admitted that going into the trial. After he came out of there, he said that the way that this trial was handled and the way that Mohammed Nord was disrespected, dehumanized, and et cetera, was worse than anything that you probably could see at Guantanamo. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's the nickname and the code name that white prosecutors, white attorneys, and others were using, Little Guantanamo. Oh. Okay.
Wow.
They treated Mohammed Nord like he was an animal. Okay. Yeah. The newspaper, Mr. Allen, has identified a reporter that covered the trial for the Star Tribune. It was outrageous, the poor reporting that came out of the major white newspapers here in covering this trial.
Yeah.
But a message, a very subtle message. And so the question posed by both yourself and my colleague is on point. The word has been sent. Step over the line, you will find yourself in trouble with immigration, and you will find yourself on a plane or a boat. You know, they laugh now, you know, back to Mogadishu, okay?
Yeah.
So that's how things are operating here. But I'm telling you, sir, down there, that $20 million is going to make a lot of people in white, notice what I said, white Australia real happy. Real happy.
Oh, yeah. 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 I was going to ask, too, do you think this is, well, it doesn't look like it so far, but do you think this would be a wake-up call to the Somali community at all?
It may be to the younger members, but they don't have any political juice, and it's the reason that, you know, I've made sure that I have hit as hard as possible on what the warning signal is that's being sent to the Somali community.
Yeah.
Step over the line, and be on a flight out of here back to Mogadishu, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is the question. The other thing is that your staff happened to ask me in preparation for this is that what is the status of the chief of the Minneapolis Police Department? Because the father, the so-called fiance of the Justine, really did a heck of a job of roasting the Minneapolis Police Department. See, a lot of people don't follow their datelines, and they were saying, well, it happened on Jhené Harto. People tend not to remember that Jhené Harto, we had a different mayor, but she was a white female. Jhené Harto, who was a Native American, gay, good person, was fired, forced out 3 days after our Justine was shot. People tend to forget that. Now, people have asked me, what is my take on the survival of Chief Madero Arredondo, the first African-American chief in the 150-year history of the Minneapolis Police Department? I said, that's a doggone good question, and more of you need to ask that question because Rondo is the target for removal. He is the target for removal.
Mm-hmm.
And it includes a mayor who is not supporting him, and he has a deputy chief who has been doing everything he can to undermine Arredondo. How Arredondo handles it, I don't know. I don't know. That's a political nature. Mr. Allen and I know that, you know, the system has its quote-unquote people, if you will. But once they begin to come after Rondo, and they already have, that the father, that was a part of the reward, and yet Rondo was ordered, he was forced to begin immediate negotiations. They began, well, they'd been actually beginning negotiations before the trial ended. But negotiations for the $20 million began within hours after the judge handed down the sentence. She didn't hand down the sentence, though she should have, you know, based on what they have done to Mohammed Nord as of yesterday morning. She should have just told him to stay standing, said that the jury has found you guilty of the following crimes, manslaughter and murder in the third degree, and a black man, I sentence you to the penitentiary for 25 years. And we wouldn't have to have been in a state of shock, sir, and I don't want to belabor it with you. Appreciate you calling in. We would have been confronted with Nora being taken out of the courtroom in shackles and et cetera, taken across the street to the county jail and put on the next bus the next morning. I don't know why they waited 3 days. They knew what they were going to do.
Yeah.
So that's what it is, sir. So I hope we've answered your questions here at the Don and Ron program.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to ask one last question, and I'll listen off the air. What percentage of black African-Americans are there on the police department there? And I'll listen. And what's going on with recruitment? I'll listen
six,
off the air.
Point six.
Thank you.
We're doing a terrible job of recruiting. Point six. In other words, about 63, 64, 65. Out of about.
Wow.
Oh, we're equal opportunity.
Let's get equal and let's get opportunity. Not.
Yeah. If you can find it. Thank you, Steve, out of the Midwest.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve, for calling again. Our number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. You're listening to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio, being broadcast live, the audio anyway. On Facebook Live, on my page, Don Allen. Mr. Edwards, there's a lot of interesting things going on in the city. We had a couple shootings last night and over the weekend, and people just don't seem to get it together. And then we have representatives from the city of Minneapolis, GVI, Gang Violence Initiative, trying to defend a lot of people on social, you know, defend their position against people on social media asking the pertinent questions. Just recently, a couple of days ago, we had a Hispanic Latino man who was in his car, innocent victim, get hit by a car of a driver in North Minneapolis, a black male, 27 years old, and died on the scene or at the hospital, basically. That's
not
what he reported.
He
probably died.
He was killed instantly.
Okay, killed instantly. And I asked some pertinent questions of this representative from Gang Violence Initiative and the city of Minneapolis. Like, where was he from? What school did he go to? Did he have a job? And what's going on? Because they seem to keep growing this petri dish of disparities in North Minneapolis. And we have these things where these people are getting killed. And I want to let people know, this was not a police chase. You cannot blame this one on the police. This guy, the police, according to the report, the police walked to his car, did their procedure, went back to the car so they could run whatever they had to run, and this guy hit the gas and tried to outrun a police. Yeah, he tried to outrun a police radio, which, you know, it's impossible. And ended up hitting this guy, killing this man who had a wife and two small children. And he was the sole provider.
Actually, let me just say this, Ms. Allen, so the people understand. It happened to be that his wife went by the scene, though she obviously did not see the car. She was on her way home, went by the scene with their three children, saw the tape and et cetera, and thought there had been an accident, continued on. When she got in the driveway of her home, she realized that her husband's car, the car he drove, the little car he drove, was not there, and she began to realize something was wrong. That family is now without a breadwinner, but you are correct. By the way, I mean, we're here to report the news. We will not name the particular minister in this situation either, but our prayers go out to the family of the minister whose nephew was gunned down in downtown Minneapolis night before last. And this comes on the heels of other shootings and killings and et cetera. But we had the nephew, as I understand it, of one of our leading young ministers, gunned down right there on, and for the naysayers, right there on First Street, First Ave North.
Mm-hmm.
Big gun.
So,
battle.
I mean, Mr. Evans,
the car
that
he was in,
he
had at least 8, 9, 10 bullets in it. Go ahead, Mr. Allen. I'm sorry to cut you off. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, no problem. But we're hearing about all these initiatives, all these things to work downtown, and we get people killed downtown Minneapolis. You know, downtown Minneapolis, you have 100,000 people alone on First Avenue because that's where all the clubs are, you know? And
right.
What's going on? I mean, what is this mayor and this limp city council trying to do or trying to prove? It we repeat this every year. Every new
so
city
here's
council.
Here's what I'm telling you, Mr.
Allen.
Let me just speak up, as we said to Steve calling out of Missouri, Kansas, is that what's going to happen, there's going to be a series of meetings, and the right people, they're going to do like they did, and if not then for Alfred Flowers, tearing that meeting up at the Urban League. They'll have a meeting. They'll have the right kind of people there, if you know what I mean, around the table, and they will be spoon-fed. The Minneapolis Foundation under former Mayor R.T. Ryback and Shonda will make pronouncements. They will give out even maybe, you know, sheets of paper to talk in terms of how you people can go about trying to acquire, you know, some of this $2 million that allegedly has been left from the $20 million. The other $18 million, like I said, is being deposited, will be deposited by Tuesday and Wednesday in banks in Australia, if you will, and then there will be the transfer of money to take care of some arrangements here in Minnesota. I repeat again, Jakarta, Indonesia, Singapore, and then transfer to accounts. And that's, by the way, Don, you and I have studied and analyzed this. This is how you do money laundering. This is how you launder dirty money. And then it will be transferred to number accounts in the Caymans, and then the money will be transferred to the accounts of the public officials, particularly, you know, a judge here and a county prosecutor there. I mean, hey, you know, what it is what it is, man. You know, it's the way things work. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. We have about 12 minutes left of the show, and we'd be remorse if we don't get to this Thor construction and their Ragnarok, or destruction, I should say.
Yes.
This week, the Star Tribune, I mean, we called this a year ago, Mr. Edwards, and it's very interesting. Star Tribune produced a story that Thor Construction is closing. We know that they were going to shut down in spite of all the lawsuits and everything that was going on. But, you know, what troubles me is that the black press locally that celebrated this urban utopia in the middle of North Minneapolis as a change agent for North Minneapolis, and it's estimated 60,000 residents, mostly people of color, that Thor Construction and this building on the corner was going to be a new heart or a lifeline.
Yep.
And now we're seeing that it's not a new lifeline. Thor Construction is closed. And the thing
that
they said
they
were going to happen.
In the Star Tribune used the word has folded. It's folded like a
that's
rug.
Folded.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. It's folded. And so, I mean, I guess my question is, shouldn't you be upset about that as a newspaper that celebrated this in the community? I'm talking about the black press, and one particularly on the north side, who celebrated this, might have got a little money here and there, and now they're staying so far away from it. And when we talk about it, you know, we hate that Thor closed. We're not teasing them. We're not laughing at them. Let's get that straight. But we're concerned because everything that celebrated that black people have in Minnesota, that once it lands in North Minneapolis, it dies.
Yep.
And this has been going on in all my lifetime. Okay? And so you have this big construction company. What do you think will happen to that building, Mr. Edwards?
That building is going to be taken over. First of all, the county has basically taken over at least better than a third. They have opened their Department of Corrections offices. The building is, for the purposes of the county, will handle all of the increase in African-American incarceration and et cetera. In fact, you won't have to catch the bus go downtown to meet with your parole officer. You just, you know, walk down to Plymouth and then see your officer. I can tell you, I won't do it, but I can tell you the times that the van arrives from downtown to take you out,
yeah.
Put you in the truck, you know what I mean, and take you down to Anoka County Jail and book you in, okay? So that will happen. Their target will have to try to protect itself and its interests by making it appear that there are some additional businesses, if you will, in the facility. They keep talking about the museum. There's no museum in that building. Everybody knows that, man. The museum left with Roxanne Gibbons when she left out of here with the $3 million, okay? You know, in the black community, your museum went with it, okay? Your museum is out there in Las Vegas, if you will. Now,
wow.
Take in light of this. This was something that was in the article for those that pretend that they read selectively. I thought that it was interesting, and it means that, and we had predicted it on our program over the last couple months when we were being toxic. The Minneapolis Star, now, you know, if the white newspaper prints it, it's got to be gossip, right? The Minneapolis
yeah.
Star Tribune in
yeah.
that article you were talking about pointed out that there was major fraud, which makes you wonder. Now, is the county attorney in Hennepin County, I can't speak for Choi, the county attorney in Ramsey County, but is Mike Freeman going to mount an investigation about major fraud? And it had to do with there was the purchase of a house. I mean, things had been going good for Thor and them. There was a purchase of a house for $262,000. That's been a nice little crib. If I do believe correctly, I think it was down there where the new housing allegedly is in, not down there with all that toxicity. The bank found out that Mr. Copeland, Mr. Norman and them tried to pull a fast one. And so this is the exact words. These ain't the words of Don and Rod. This is the words of the Star Tribune. So if you want to go on and attack on somebody, go down there to the Star Tribune, attack the white folks. Go up to Glenn Taylor's office. He was down there at the Target Center because he's also the owner of the Timberwolves. They sold that house for $500 to a friend in order to try to hide their assets. Remember, we had said on these programs 3 months ago that the bank was going after all their assets all across the country and et cetera, and in the course of doing that, they found out about this transaction. It's not something that Don and Ron are making up. It's in the white man's paper. And, of course, we all know how we think here, I guess. If it's in the white man's paper, it must be the gospel in the name of Jesus. You know what I'm saying? Now, that's major fraud, Don. That's major fraud.
Oh, yeah.
Right there in the article.
I agree.
There in the article. Yeah. $262,000 home purchase. Tried to hide the asset. Sold it to a buddy for $500.
Wow. Just not right. Mr. Edwards, since we've been on the air 9 minutes ago, there's a story posted in the Star Tribune about the shooting here on Lexington Avenue between or University Avenue, the 900 block of University Avenue between Lexington Avenue and Victoria Street. Police officers called 2 a.m. arrived to find a man with a apparent gunshot wound. He was pronounced dead at the scene. Lavelle Darren Brown, in Friday's shooting death, Lavelle Darren Brown, 27 of St. Paul, was booked into Ramsey County. I just looked at his Facebook page. He looks like he has a kid, a shooter. But the guy that was shot and killed, there's no name. And I'm going to tell you, living over here in St. Paul in the Hamlin neighborhood, when we go, I think it would be south toward University, and then we get down there to Lexington, it is a total chaos. I mean, every now and then, my wife and I like to have a nice bottle of wine, and we go to that liquor store. There's about 7-8 guys out front asking for dollars, and you know, I have it, I normally give it to them because I'm not worried about them, but you see the transition of the new soccer stadium and how they're trying to clean up the neighborhood and push that element further down University into the 100 instead of the,
and back across the freeway into the east side where the African-American church was firebombed. There was also a broad daylight shooting 2 days ago on Maryland in St. Paul. A man was shot and killed in broad daylight. And in fact, they had it all over the news yesterday. Now, you're saying there was a shooting last night in the area of Victoria and whatever?
University between the 900 block of University between Lexington and Victoria. Yes.
That's 2 homicides in St. Paul in less than 24 hours. And over here, they're shooting them up left and right. And like I said, one of our younger ministers lost his nephew gunned down just on the outskirts of downtown. And the car that the young man was in was riddled with bullets. I don't know what
yeah,
to say.
So,
you know.
Yeah, and I mean we don't hear anything. You know, we have a black mayor here, and we have not had any official statements or conferences, press conferences. And you know, there is an NAACP over here, a couple other folks over here, and all these mighty black leaders. And the silence is unbelievable, Mr. Edwards. Just unbelievable. Both in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the surrounding suburbs, where there are pockets of black American or people of color, the agencies are silent. And
now you say
it's very
so that we have transparency and we're not accused of toxicity. You're saying that it was just posted about now 11 minutes ago, right? That there was
11
a shooting
minutes ago. Yep, 11 minutes
between
ago.
Lexington and Victoria. Wow.
Yeah, on University.
You know, that's
right there
by the beloved church of St. Peter Claiborne. Oh my God,
yes.
St. Peter Claiborne, right there in between those two avenues or streets or whatever. Okay. Well, I don't know. I don't know what's happening. The caller from outstate asked what was the Somali community. You asked the same question about to do. I think they're so fear-stricken by the move of the white judge and the prosecutor, the Mike Freeman, who says that it's his job to put as many Negroes in jail as possible. I think their actions have terrified the Somali community.
Mm-hmm. And again, I'd like to reiterate that if you live in the city of Minneapolis, think carefully about your next mayor and city council people. Think very carefully because they're not for you.
Yeah.
They're not helping you, and they're too green, and they don't have no salt on them, okay? And you really need to take another look at what's happening, you know, and the decisions that are being made and who they answer to. And they're not answering to anyone, I'll tell you that right now. And they're doing their own thing, and it's time to make some changes. And unfortunately, and fortunately, the only opportunity you have is at the ballot box. Also, one more thing quickly, Mr. Edwards, we have 2 minutes, 30 seconds.
Okay.
What is her name? Anika Bowie, who was going to run for the city council seat one, did not make the cut at the DFL. Her and the other challenger they gave it to this other guy. Let me see if I can look this up real quick while I have you live, while we're live on the air. I should have had it up already. But they walked out of the DFL endorsing convention saying it was unfair. And we've asked Ms. Bowie to come on our show several times, and she just felt as if this is my opinion. I went to Hamlin with her, so she's a fellow Piper, and I thought just because of that relationship, we'd get her on the air and, you know, we'd have these conversations, but she, you know, didn't bother to do it. And so they went in there and ended up walking out of the, and as reported by the Star Tribune again, walking out of the, and the St. Paul Partner Press, walking out of the endorsing convention, citing that the DFL was being unfair. And so I told her maybe she should run it with another party, you know, do something else with someone else. They endorsed member Dial Fong.
You know, the protocol. You go file as an independent. All you need to do is get a petition. I don't know. I think it's 5,000 names or whatever of registered voters. If folks who say they tell us they know what they're doing, they know how the process works and the protocol and et cetera, maybe she should run as the Green Party or Independent Party or the Orange Party or, you know, even the Communist Party. Because actually we still have the Communist Party. Did you know, Mr. Allen? On the roll as a party.
Yes.
I don't know if they've met the requirement with regards to continued participation, but, you know, hey, you know, I mean, Donald Trump loves Vladimir Putin. I mean, they got a love affair. So, you know, black nationalism and things like that is out of style, but communism isn't. Oops.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And with less than 30 seconds left in closing, I'd just like to say in the city of Minneapolis, black lives don't matter.
All right. And God's hand be upon the shoulder of Muhammad Noor. Take care. Bring us home, James.
Yep.
To do things for ourselves. We're tired of beating our head against the wall and working for someone else.